Welcome to Cooking for Love, a podcast exploring the stories of people who cook from the heart, inspired by my nanny who taught me what cooking for love meant. I'm Kate Mobley, and this week I'll be chatting to Lucy Dearlove. Lucy is an audio producer and food writer, having worked for the likes of the BBC and The Guardian. Before working in the world of radio, Lucy worked as a chef in a cafe. To combine her two loves of food and audio, Lucy started the podcast Lekker, which is one of the most highly acclaimed UK food podcasts. So it's equally exciting and nerve-wracking to have her on the podcast today. I hope you'll forgive my amateur skills. I would highly recommend listening to Lekker. I started making a list of my favourite episodes, but it got a bit too long, so I'll just say go listen to it. And for any fellow Manxies out there, there's even an episode on the Isle of Man. So it's a real honour to say, Lucy Dearlove, welcome to Cooking for Love.
Oh, thank you, Kate. That was such a lovely intro. And this is not an amateur setup at all. I'd say this is probably like more professional than some of my Lekker recordings now. So Congratulations. It's a great podcast.
So to start with, I always ask people what's something you've cooked recently that made you excited.
Okay, so I've been away quite a lot the past month. Like, I've ended up having quite a busy August. I was actually in Manchester for a few days, and then I went to Hastings for a week for a holiday, and then I was house sitting in North London, which is the opposite end of London to where I live in South East. And so I've actually not really been cooking that much. Mm-hmm. I kind of intended to do more cooking when I was at the house in North London, because it's this really beautiful open plan kitchen with this like glass roof. It's stunning. Mm-hmm. But like, there's just something about not being in your own kitchen that makes it not very appealing. Yeah. But I have to say, I got back to my place this week and I kind of like wanted to have some things planned to cook that are nice and easy. And so I went for like some real fail-safe recipes, which for me is always, there's a one pot Anna Jones kale and tomato pasta that you do. And like, it's like a magic sauce. It absorbs all the water you put in, and like you put chopped tomatoes in it. I probably eat it about like once a week on average, because it's just, and you can use like any green vegetable. It's really good. So made that. It's ready in like 15 minutes.
I've not made any of those pasta dishes where the pasta cooks in the sauce. I've been a bit skeptical, but now you've said so, maybe I need to.
I can understand the skepticism. And I saw there was like a period before I made it, there was a period where I feel like everyone that I followed on the internet was talking about the magic Anna Jones pasta. Mm-hmm. And I'm like a naturally contrary person. So as soon as I see everyone going on about it, I'm like, oh God. Like, I've never watched Game of Thrones because I'm like, it's just been too hyped now. I could never enjoy it. But actually, like, I have to say, this did live up to the hype, and it's just so easy. And it's like a formula you can sort of adapt. It's like a very clever recipe. You can adapt it to kind of whatever you've got. You can probably use tinned tomatoes if you wanted. Nice. Use any kind of pasta. Anyway, I recommend it. It's really good.
I like that kind of recipe where it's like kind of open you for interpretation. So
I think it's the best kind. Like, I really enjoy cooking from recipes, but I also enjoy them as a kind of suggestion.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Like, for what I have in the cupboard.
Yeah, I was like, I've been trying to think of a way to do a cookbook where it's like, this is how you cook with what you have at home. But I don't think there's a way.
I went to, so the food writer Rebecca May Johnson's got a book out, I think this week actually, or maybe last week. Mm-hmm. And I went to see her do a talk about it. And a lot of the book is about like the recipe, and kind of the recipe is like an academic text. Like, it's a really smart book. Like, reading it, I was just like, yeah. My head explodes. It's so good. It's really changed. I've spoken to a few people who've agreed that it's really changed how they see food writing. So I really recommend the book. Cool. It's called Small Fires. And she, in this talk that she did, she was talking about how like this kind of like gap between recipes and not recipes is just kind of stupid. Like, mm-hmm. everything is kind of a recipe. She was like, there's this guy who did a recipe book. I think maybe he was a New York Times food writer, and he did this recipe book that was a no recipe recipe book, but it was just like lists of ingredients and directions and just didn't have amounts on, but she was like, that to me just seems like a really annoying recipe. Yeah. So everything is a recipe.
That would panic so many people, I know.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're very used to cooking from recipes where we have our hands held. And I think, yeah, some people would be like, what?
Yeah, for sure. I want to get Ruby Tando's new book, you know, it's all like very
Cook As
simple
You
and
Are. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, it's
Sounds
a
really
great
good.
book. There's quite a few things in there. There's this recipe in there that I also make loads. In fact, that was the I also bought the ingredients so I could make that this week if I wanted to. And it's like fried tofu with sweet and sour sauce and greens, and you just have it with rice. And I made it for a friend. My friend Nadia came over, like I think when the book had first come out, actually, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna make it for her. And she was just like, have you just made sweet and sour sauce in front of me? And it took you like 5 minutes. I was like, yeah, that's Ruby's magic.
Yeah,
It's such a good
that's
book.
cool. I like that. Sorry, I think I interrupted your second
Oh, my monologue
question.
about what else I've cooked. I also made a chorizo and bean stew, which is like a thing I make a lot that just has no recipe. I can't really remember. I think I might have actually started making it in the cafe that I worked in, which it was very generous of you to describe me as a chef. I was definitely not a chef. I was very much a cook.
If you get paid to cook,
I like, you know what?
that's
Maybe
the
I'm gonna reframe that experience in my mind and call
best.
myself a chef. I think it would probably get me into trouble at some point from people expecting me to be able to do something and I can't. But we used to make a chorizo and chickpea stew in the winter, and it's just delicious and it's really easy. And obviously chorizo is something that keeps for a long time. So like if you eat meat, having one of those in the fridge means that you can have something delicious at any point. So I made that.
Quick dinner in the making, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which I really love cooking, but I hate the, I don't mind the planning. It's just more like the food shopping side I really hate. So it's good if I can have things in that will keep for a while, and then I can be like, oh yeah, I do have something in.
Yeah, like even if I plan for the week, I never follow it because I just cook what I feel like cooking.
Exactly, and
It's
you
like
just
as long
don't
as
know
I've
what's going
got
to
some things
happen.
in.
Yeah, and food waste like really stresses me out. Like me and my husband have had arguments more than once because I think I take the using up of the veg box that we get more seriously than he does, which I do because I take it more seriously than anyone needs to take it. Like, but it
But
really stresses me out. I'm like, oh my God, like I'll be out somewhere in the pub and I'll be like, oh, I've just got that button that's wash at home. Like, oh my God, like is it gonna be all right? Yeah, you can use things way, way longer than you think.
yeah, for sure. So I've also been away a lot recently, so I've had any cooking really that's been too exciting. But I was in Spain last weekend
Whereabouts?
and in Santiago de Compostela.
Oh, cool.
It's
Okay.
like north.
Okay.
So it's like in the Galatian,
Galicia? Is it? I can
Galician,
sort of see it written
that's
down. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Yeah.
And there, a delicacy is barnacles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we tried those, and it was, yeah, they were really good.
It's so funny how many things grow in the wild that are edible, and that you just, because like I don't know, either we've lost the knowledge that's been handed down, or like we just culturally don't eat those things, because there are so many barnacles off the like UK coast that you would think that we would. I just read this other really great book by this writer called Thea Leonarduzzi called Dandelions, and it's basically about her family. Like there was like quite a few generations of migration between Italy and the UK. And the book is called Dandelions, partly because they eat dandelions. Like that's like a real delicacy in the part of Italy that she's from. And I think more widely
Really?
in Italy generally, there's lots of like dialect names for dandelions. I think it's Tarasco in Italian. But yeah, they'll just like wilt them and then dress them with salt and pepper, olive oil, and lemon. And I was just like, what? Why do we not eat them here? That's ridiculous. And she's like, yeah, when my grandma would pick them, people would like ask her what she was doing. Like people would gossip about her. Like, what is that? You know, it was like a real, but they're
I
tasty.
mean,
So I really want to try cooking them now.
yeah, also it's like it's really obviously depending on where you pick them, but it's so good for you to eat from the wild, and
Yeah.
especially, I mean, that must be really good for hay fever.
Oh yeah. God, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. I think it is just like when you live somewhere where people have dogs, like you just need to be careful. Especially, I feel like dandelions are a real like always like flat on the ground. So I would be a bit wary about that. But that's interesting because I get really bad hay fever and I get really annoyed when people tell me to eat local honey because I'm like, I live in a major city. Even the honey that's made like that, I don't think it's gonna help me.
No, I
Yeah,
think
but
I
maybe
try
it's worth a try
and
with the dandelions.
if you I'm trying to think where in London you could get dandelions, but probably
Yeah, it
some
was.
parks.
There's definitely, I mean, you definitely see them around, but yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to eat all of them. It's like every year everyone goes absolutely wild for wild garlic season. And it's got to the point where all the patches that are known in different parts of London are just decimated because
I
people are just so
know.
obsessed with getting it. It's like, oh, guys, we need to. This is not how you eat world food.
Yeah, I know. One of my friends told me about a secret spot near me, and she's like, "You cannot tell anyone." And it's like, have to like creep through these trees, and it's like, dogs definitely can't get here.
That's good.
But it's like, yeah, so it's quite nice because it's like definitely clean and can't be decimated. Good.
Okay, that is, yeah, that's what you need. Luckily, it does seem to be quite hardy, but I do worry about its long-term future.
It's very in trend at the moment as well, so.
Definitely, yeah, everyone just needs to move on to the next thing and then. So what else did you eat? Anything else good in Spain?
We had, oh, what was it called? Poplo de Galicia, so octopus
Oh,
essentially, which
amazing.
was really good, and it was my husband's first time trying it.
Oh, wow.
He's like, he's really good with trying new things, and he like was excited to try it, but they're like, what's the little like things on the
Like the
skin?
suckers.
Yeah, but
Yeah,
he
I don't
was
know what they're called.
like a little
Yeah.
bit squeamish about that, but he
I
still
can
tried it and it
understand
was
that.
really good. And I think it was lucky that the restaurant we first tried it at was really good, so it was like really tender.
Okay, yeah, because it can be chewy if it's not cooked right. Yeah.
So I think that was good, and yeah, it was really delicious. So, and it was really nice. We went to a seafood and fish restaurant, and I'm allergic to fish, but
Oh, yeah, I
not
heard you saying on another episode.
shellfish.
Okay, yeah.
And like normally, if I try and even go to a fish restaurant, and I say that, they just look at me like I'm completely mad. But the
Yeah.
waiter, like I was like, I'm allergic to fish, but can I have shellfish? And he was like, okay, fine.
Great. That must
And
be
like,
reassuring. Yeah.
yeah, and he was like, not you, no problem. And it's just so nice to be treated like
That
that.
was that
So,
wasn't a big deal. Yeah. Because that's also like that's not an uncommon thing. Like, because weirdly, even though we see them as the same thing, like when it comes to allergens, they seem to be quite different. Like I've got a few friends that can't eat fish or can't eat shellfish and vice versa, but can eat the other thing.
So yeah, that was really good. But yeah, so back to you. So, I reckon having a food podcast means you're a big foodie. Obviously, we've been chatting about food for ages already. Have you always been interested in food? Was it a big part of your upbringing?
Yeah, definitely. I think not necessarily in the way that it is now. Like now I'm really interested in it sort of from all angles and I love to read about it. Like I think I didn't really, there was lots of food writers and cookbook authors that I didn't discover until I was much older. But it was definitely a big part of my life. Like my mum taught me to cook when I was really young. Lots of mince-based dishes was how I got into cooking. So spaghetti bolognese, chili con carne, a classic mince with onions. And
Nice.
I didn't really like, I always think that I wasn't a fussy eater, but looking back, I was actually quite particular. Like I didn't like onion in things. I didn't like bits of onion. So my mum was, if she was cooking something or if she was helping me cook something, she'd cut the onion so it was big. So you got the flavor of it, but I didn't have to pick the bits out. And
That's nice.
I think it was really like, I think she had a really nice approach to it that she didn't like force me to eat it or make a big deal out of it. She was just like, you might like it at some point, but, and she's right. Like I absolutely love onions now, but there was a few things like that. Like, I think it was just a very kind of relaxed, approach towards food and like, we got excited about food as a family. Like I'm an only child and it's just me and my mum and dad, and if a new restaurant opened we'd get really excited about it and go to it. Like I remember for maybe like in my mid-teens for my birthday we went to this Mongolian buffet in Middlesbrough,
Cool.
And it had like a kind of more standard Chinese buffet as part of it. But then there was this bit where you could, like, you picked out your raw meat and your veg and like what carb you wanted, like noodles or rice, and then a sauce, and they would cook it for you to order. And my dad is somebody that gets really excited about trying new foods. So that was like a really exciting thing for him. But I think, like, where, so I grew up in the Northeast, and like Middlesbrough was my kind of nearest big town, I guess, but I was a bit further out. And there like wasn't a huge like range of different foods available. And I think it's very different now, but I mean, yeah, I moved to London when I was 18 and was just like, wow, there's a whole world out there. Like, this is so exciting.
What was your first kind of exploration of London food?
Oh
Do you
God. I
remember?
mean, I have this really like distinct memory of, so I went to uni in London, and I lived in halls in like really central London, which is quite a like quite an amazing experience when you're 18 to like, yeah, I grew up in a village that didn't have a shop, that was like 2 miles from the nearest shop, and
Sounds
then
familiar.
yeah. And then suddenly I was like 15 minutes walk from Oxford Street Topshop. Like,
Oh my God.
it was a culture shock, but in like the best way. Like, I absolutely loved it. Like, I'd always been kind of a bit of a city kid. Like, I always loved like being where there was stuff going on. I mean, I can't say that I ate like super well when I first moved to London. I was also in catered halls, so that was like kind of a weird experience. But I remember there was this chain pizza place really near my halls. I think it was like a ZZ or a Prezzo or like one of them. It wasn't a Pizza Express, but it was like one like a place like that. And okay,
They do come up all kind of mold, like mold into one in my mind.
they're basically all the same restaurant, like, let's be honest. But we used to go there, like particularly when our loan had come in, we'd go there,
That was the
which I'm
time.
not quite sure why we'd go there, because there was another pizza place like further down the road that was independent and did pizzas for like £3. So I'm not really sure why we ever went to that place. Is Ikko on Charlotte Street. Like, it's still an amazing like cheap eat in central
Amazing.
London. It's really great. But for some reason we'd gone to this place. I think we wanted to be sophisticated and have like a glass of wine. And I just remember being like, I've never liked an olive in my life, but like maybe it's time to start. And so I ordered some olives, and I was like, I guess I like olives now, and I've loved them ever since. So
Oh my
I
God,
think it
that's
was
so
almost like
good.
a psychological thing of being like, I feel like this is something that someone who lives in London does, so I'm gonna do it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I ate. I mean, like, just lots of late night, like ill-advised takeaways.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I do have a memory that's not like one of my least proud moments, which is dropping an entire McDonald's chicken burger on the floor, like next to the bus stop, and then being like, and just like picking it up and eating it. And I was quite ill the next day, so like whether that was hangover or the pavement chicken burger,
I
I
mean,
don't
I'm not gonna give any judgment there because I
know.
feel like I would do the same thing.
It like every part of it separated as well. It was like bread, honestly. Like,
Just reconstructing this burger.
I try, I'm like, you know, I'm fairly like, I try and be quite, you know, pragmatic about germs and not worry too much about it, because I think, you know, we need to survive as humans. But that is something I would not do now,
Extreme, yeah,
definitely.
extreme level. So
But yeah,
you
I can't think of like, I think probably it took a bit longer for me to fully appreciate the sort of things you could get in London. I think it was probably like moving out, maybe moving out to like Bethnal Green when I'd left uni, and being in a bit more of a neighborhood, which was like an actual community and had loads of amazing food. There was this great Chinese restaurant there that I can't remember the name of, but I remember trying like pork knuckle, pork foot or something, and
Cool.
getting that and being like, oh, cool, okay,
Yeah,
great.
I love that dish.
Yeah, it's so good.
So you mentioned bolognese and mince-based stuff. What was some of your, but what's one of your favorite food memories of your childhood, do you think?
Probably like the thing that I always think about is, so yeah, I'm from kind of like the countryside outside of Teesside, but my mum grew up in Redcar, which is on the northeast coast, and that's actually where we lived until I was like three. And there's this amazing ice cream place in Redcar called Pasitto's that's still there, and it's basically like if you were gonna put an ice cream parlor like in a film, you would probably make it look like Pasitto's. It's got like the
Oh,
counter, it's got like
lovely.
Formica tables, it's got like the menu, does all these different sundaes. And just like, yeah, so I have so many childhood memories of going there, like over different parts of my life. So, and they just do like soft serve, so it's just like Mr. Whippy.
Oh, amazing.
There's lots of different things that I've kind of chosen to eat over like different parts of my life. Like when I was a kid, I'd always get like a little kid's sundae. And they do, so there's this thing in Redcar called a lemon top, which is a whippy ice cream with lemon, like whippy lemon sorbet on the top of it.
That
I've
sounds
actually never really liked it that much because I don't really like love lemon sorbet, but like people
amazing.
love it. It's like a real like local thing. But instead, I would always get this. It's like this red sauce. It's just like a raspberry sauce, and it's called monkey blood, which I don't know if there's a reference to like, because in Hartlepool, which is just up the coast, there's like all these kind of bits of folklore about monkeys and like
Right.
their football mascot is a monkey. Anyway,
Okay.
so I don't know if it's a reference to that, but my mum always talks about the fact that every time I ate this sauce, I would just go like unbelievably hyper. Like it obviously had something in it that just like sent me up the wall. So I would
Hence why I
eat.
kept going back for the good
Yeah,
stuff.
hence why I would always ask for it. And then went through a chocolate sundae phase. They do a really good like cherry and chocolate sundae,
Ooh.
and now I'm actually like a real Knickerbocker Glory fan. Like it's really extra, and it comes in this like really tall, like beautiful glass, and it's got like bright green and bright red sauce. But yeah, absolutely love it. Yeah, I still go like whenever I visit my parents, like I try and make sure we can go because it's just like really nice. It hasn't really changed, and it's still like loads of teenagers do it as their summer jobs. There's just always like a load of young
Yeah.
girls in there like having a gossip behind the counter, and it's just like a really great place. I love
Oh,
it.
I really want to go, and it's kind of ringing a bell. Has it? Did you do? Was it on your podcast or maybe the BBC Good Food?
Yeah, the
Food.
BBC did an episode about it, and I was
It's when
really
you said
annoyed
lemon
because I was
top.
like, that's so funny you've heard that. Yeah, they did an episode about ice cream, and they did actually go there because I was really annoyed. I was like, damn, I kind of wanted to do a lekka about this, but I mean, I still could, but
Yeah, for
I
sure.
was kind
It's
of
just
annoyed
part of
that.
their one, so.
Exactly. Yeah, and I was like weirdly proud to, even though obviously I have nothing to do with the business, but I was like, oh, I'm so pleased that people know about it. I think it's actually because I think it's part of like a tradition of like ice cream people who came here from Italy like opening ice cream shops. And I think there were actually a few Positos. I think there's one in Scarborough as well, but I don't know if they're linked. But yeah, it's a real like institution in the Northeast. It's everyone knows it.
Yeah, there's a similar thing in Scotland. A lot of Italians moved to
Yes,
Scotland as well. So, yeah, I think there's a bit of that in
absolutely.
Edinburgh for sure.
Yes, it's such an interesting like little piece of history that I think like maybe the details have got a bit blurred.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I love that. I love like the picturesque kind of ice cream parlor. It's just, yeah, such a vibe. I love it.
Yeah, and like, Redcar is not a place that has like nice weather. It's on like the North Sea, but like still all year round. They're like dead busy, and they do loads of toasties as well, but it's just like it's something you can enjoy in any weather.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I was listening again to your Tiny Feasts episode, like as I was preparing for this, but I nearly started crying at your
Oh
mum's
God, the
voice
bread
note.
sauce.
Just because I was like, it's actually, I listened to it at the time and I obviously enjoyed it, but looking back, it's such a good like little clip of that time.
That time, I know. I actually like, I haven't listened back to it, and I haven't listened back to the lockdown episodes because I just find it really sort of hard to process. And I think to be like, it was really emotional, like not being able to see them that Christmas. And yeah, I'm not sure I'd be able to get through it now. I think it would definitely make me cry.
I was like, when she first said it, I was like, oh my God. And
No.
then, as you kind of described, I think you really captured really well how actually you don't have to be together for food to connect you.
Yeah,
And that was
yeah.
like really true. And like, I think that was something we realized through lockdown is yeah, that food can connect you even if you're not together, which was really nice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I hadn't really thought about that either. But and I can't remember if I talked about this in the episode or not because it was so long ago. But yeah, during the pandemic, we got into the habit of we would get these like pasta things from this company called Nonatonda, and they just send you like a bag of sauce and a bag of fresh pasta, and it takes 5 minutes to cook it, And then it's really nice. Like, it's basically like, you know, much better than I could probably make at home in that amount of time, definitely in that amount of time. But my parents start getting it as well. And so we would like cook it and then eat it together pretty much every Friday. Which was really nice. Yeah. Like, I think at the longest point, I didn't see them for about 9 months, which is just like, you know, obviously the longest, well, not obviously, but it was the longest I'd ever gone without seeing them. And yeah, definitely, but it's definitely true like that. And also there was something about like us eating together while on the call that just like it was just a bit more casual, because I think there's something about being on a Zoom. Like, I understand why quizzes were so popular, because it just meant that you didn't have to be constantly talking, like, yeah. You know, having a really intense together, conversation, yeah. But you're still together. Like, we could just, it felt a bit more like, you know, when you're sat around a table and you don't really need to talk that much, like, or you can just comment on the thing that's happening, like, to all of you, that shared experience that you're having. But like, none of us had any shared experiences apart from the horrible thing that was happening to everyone. So it was, yeah, it was a really nice way to kind of like just step away from like the intensity of like pretty much all interactions of that time. But it was like, you know, purely just from like a personal point of view, it was just a nice thing to do to actually get to see them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did it, and I actually had a couple, because I was doing like providing lockdown meals.
Right.
I had a few people whose birth had a birthday or something, and I would deliver the same meal to like five different houses, and then
that's so nice.
Eat it together. I was like, oh, I love those. And I was like, oh, so-and-so says hi.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
I was delivering it. And it was, yeah, that was, I really loved that.
Oh, that's so interesting to see that side of it. Like, I wonder if they, like, the couriers for the company realised that it was like probably not. Cause it's but that's really funny.
Yeah. Oh. So you kind of touched on London just a minute ago, but do you have any current favourite places that you would recommend?
Oh my God, so many.
If you're going to London for a weekend.
Oh my God. Well, I have to say, like, Eta is where I get all my recs. So, like, yeah, I mean, Jonathan Nunn has like absolutely changed the game for restaurant writing. Like, if we're going to a new area, I'll quite often just Google the area and Jonathan Nunn to see.
He's
just so comprehensive.
Scroll through Victuals every time.
Yes.
It's so long. Yeah. But,
long. Yeah. I actually ate at one of his recommendations this week that I hadn't eaten at before, because I was going to the cinema in central London, and so I wanted to eat somewhere like round Leicester Square. And it's actually, you know, there's a surprisingly further centre of town, like there's a surprisingly good amount of places, mostly in Chinatown. And I normally go to Wong Kee, which is a place that he's written about quite a bit. Yeah, I ate at this place called Cafe TPT and ordered this thing that he recommended, which was a baked pork chop Macau style. And it's one of those things that I just would never have ordered it if I hadn't seen someone be like, oh, you should try this.
I would order it.
No, and it was amazing. It was like, it came and it almost looked like, I don't know, like a baked pasta dish or something. It came in this dish, yeah, and it had like this top that was sort of like caramelized and golden. So it's covered in this like bechamel, and then the pork, which is baked, it's sort of like hammered really thin and then baked underneath it. And then it's got egg fried rice underneath that, so it's baked in layers. And the top isn't cheesy, but it's got this very, it's very like bechamel texture, and it's just got this really nice like savory flavor. And me and my husband both had it and we were just like, oh my God, like this is amazing. I never would have ordered this, just because, you know. But it's nice, like I'm so glad that restaurant writing has kind of like opened up in the way, because I remember when, and I think I've talked a bit about this, and I recently interviewed Helen Graves on Lekka, who's a food writer, and when I was sort of first getting interested in food, maybe like 10, 12 years ago, I would, her and her little crew, like I would read all their food blogs. So I've like, similar to now, I just Google like Jonathan Nunn and the area. I would, if I wanted to find out what someone had written about a restaurant, I would Google like the restaurant and then the name of the blog. There's a blog called Cheese and Biscuits, and yeah, and a blog called Hollow Legs, and then Helen's blog, Food Stories. And I think there's always been like people talking about like restaurants outside of mainstream, but I'm just really glad that like it's sort of happening in a bit more like of an open space now, maybe. Anyway, definitely recommend the Macau pork chop at Cafe TPT. But in terms of other places I'd recommend, like I think it's often like less overwhelming to think about London in terms of neighborhoods. Like obviously there's lots of restaurants that I love to eat at outside of where I live, but if someone's coming to London and they're like, where should I eat? I'm always like, where are you staying?
Yeah.
Because that
You
helps
don't want to
narrow it
travel too
down.
far, yeah.
Yeah, and it is just like there are so many great places. Like someone messaged me on Instagram this week and was like, oh, where should I eat in Hackney? And I was like, oh, that's helpful. Like I actually don't know it that well, but like you could try Cafe Cecilia, which is this like great restaurant on Broadway Market that's like quite a sort of fancy like European type place. But also like great kebabs on Green Lanes, you could make the trip over. There's this place called Bake Street, which does like amazing fried chicken sandwiches. So I guess I should probably talk about like the places to eat where I live that I
Yeah, that
really
would be
love.
good.
My closest place that I love to eat is a Caribbean takeaway called Smoky Jerky. I believe it's Jamaican. And that's like the best jerk I've ever had. It's so good. They do this jerk lamb that's incredible.
Ooh, nice.
Amazing rice and peas, like this hot pepper sauce that is like absolutely lethal. And since COVID, I don't know if they've gone back to it now actually, but during COVID, you used to just put the sauce on yourself, like they would give it to you, and there's the two bottles on the counter, and they're like, there's the jerk sauce and then the hot pepper sauce. But now, like they didn't want everyone to touch the bottles, obviously, so they would put it on for you, and they would always put on way more than I would put on for myself. So it was quite like a nice challenge. Like it's so delicious, but it's just so hot.
Super spice. You come become comes a kind of challenge, and it's like
Yeah,
the
and I
more you
love a
have
bit
it,
of
the more you're
heat, but
addicted
like,
to it.
yeah, and it's got that. I don't know if it's made with I think it is made with Scotch bonnet, and it's got that really amazing, like, sort of fruity flavor that I just absolutely love. Like, I can't get enough of it. Otherwise, there's a restaurant down the road for me, kind of the other way, called Peck and Sellers, which I really love. Like, your classic neighborhood small plates and natural wine bar. Like, there's many of them
London
cropping
does
up.
that very well.
Very well. Oh, I have to say, like Manchester also does it very. I
Yeah.
went to Erst a few
Oh,
weeks ago. Oh
very
my God, like
good.
one of the best meals I've had this year. It's so
Yeah, for
good.
sure. It's so good.
But yeah, Peck and Sellers, big fan, like lovely staff, just a really nice experience. Like I've been there for like a casual drink and a snack. I've been there for like a celebration dinner. It does like both things really well. Really nice. My friends have quite recently opened a bakery down the road towards Camberwell called Frog, though they're about to change their name. I mean, I'm biased because they're my friends and I work there sometimes, but it is just a really amazing bakery. Like it's run by Rebecca, who used to bake bread for people like Brick House Bread, which is a bakery in East Dulwich, and has baked at loads of other like amazing sourdough bakeries in London. And then Oliver, who used to work at Ottolenghi, and has just and they're just like they both just have this like approach to flavor in baking that is incredible. So yeah, I love it. I'm actually working there tomorrow, and I'm just really excited to like pretend to drop something on the floor and then eat
Yeah, I was gonna say, oh,
it.
this one doesn't look quite right.
Oh no. Squashed that one. Yeah, and then like classic favorites. Where do I like? There's a great Vietnamese restaurant in Deptford that I love called Viet Rest. It's like a real comfort place. Love to go there. Like again, like any occasion. Quality Chop House is probably my favorite, like
Yeah, okay.
special occasion place. Yeah, and they also do a great lunch deal.
I've not been there yet, but it's on my list for
I think
sure.
if I was going to say to people, like, if you're coming to London, you want to have like one blowout meal, that's usually where I say you should go. I would like, I think the lunch is probably a good starting point as well because it is like quite an expensive place to have dinner, but the lunch is very good value and they're really nice. I usually go there. Like my parents usually come down to London for my birthday and we go and have lunch there. But we've done that the
Oh, that's
past
a
few
good,
years. Yeah, it's
yeah.
a really nice little mini tradition. Yeah, honestly, I could go on forever. There's so many
Yeah,
great restaurants.
that's a good place. We've done well there with very
Yeah,
good.
I
But
could bore you
definitely
all day.
the pork chop is the one that sticks in my mind the most, so I'll definitely have
Yeah, I
to
want to go back
try
and
that
have it
next
again.
time.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
You mentioned about working in the cafe. And obviously in bakery now as well. What is your experience of working in hospitality like, and did it impact your love of food, or how did it change your kind of relationship with food?
I think everyone should work in hospitality for a period because I think people would be a lot nicer to hospitality staff.
For sure.
I just have ultimate respect for people who do it as like a full-time thing, whether it's front of house or back of house or in the kit, you know, whatever. It's like, it is hard work. And the job I had where I worked in a cafe was one of those things where I just really needed a job. Like I was trying to get into radio and I was freelancing, but I just needed something to pay the rent essentially so I could do stuff around it. And it was one of those things where I just took this job on a whim, and then like it kind of changed my life. Like it was in this cafe. Yeah. I always felt like, I don't know, it was just me, but I made a friend who also works there at the same time, Alicia, and we're still friends now. And we kind of have conversations about it over the years. And she was like, yeah, it was just a real life-changing period for me working in that cafe. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad it's not just me. But it was just like, you know, I was in my like mid-20s. I didn't really know what I was doing. I liked food, but I hadn't ever cooked that seriously. And the cafe was run by this woman called Rosie Lovell, who'd written a couple of cookbooks and had opened this cafe in Brixton Market, like basically like pre-gentrified Brixton Market. This was like the first nail in the wall, I guess. But her recipes were just like super interesting, like very, like often quite simple, but really amazing things put together. And we did these like toasted paninis and, you know, just really like nice ingredients. And I learned to make coffee, which was cool. Like, not amazingly, but that was fun. And we used to make pretty much everything that we sold. Like there was a few cakes that we brought in, but you know, you'd start the morning and you'd go to the cash and carry in the market, which was just around the corner, and you'd be like, all right, what's in? And if it was summer, you'd make a big salad. And if it was winter, you'd make a big soup, depending on like whatever. We had like a rotation of things that we could make. And it was just really nice. Like, I don't know if I'd ever have a job like that again. And it was just, it's a really interesting experience, like working around people in that way. And yeah, like getting to know, you know, it was like absolute highs and lows. Mm-hmm. But I like, absolutely like wouldn't trade that experience for anything. Like it was really, it was definitely like really formative. And it was actually like kind of, working there, like I sort of had like the first like seeds of an idea for making a podcast about food, but I just didn't have the skills to do it then. So I was just like, oh, it's just so interesting to see, like, even like if I came in a bad mood in the morning and then I made a soup, I'd be like, oh, do you know what, it's all right, like I feel better now.
The angry chopping.
yeah exactly. And I was like, oh, I'd love to talk to people about the, and that's kind of how Leather started in the first place. It was sort of like I wanted to talk to people about how like the process of making food had changed their life in some way, and it's kind of broadened out from that a bit more, but that was like the original idea, was I wanted to talk to people about how food had changed their life in some like small and specific way. Mm-hmm. Because that's how it changed mine, really, like just the actual like physical like meditative act of cooking, I think is really helpful to me, as I think it is to lots of people.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, and working in the bakery is probably like the best hospitality job I can imagine, because A, like everyone is really happy to be there. Like yeah. they'll wait 20 minutes just to come in because it's so good. And also like the interactions that you have with people are pretty much like normally like maximum 90 seconds. So even if someone's bad vibes, like they're out of there. Yeah. In 90 seconds. Whereas if you're in a cafe or a restaurant, you have to keep coming back to that person and kind of like gritting your teeth to be like, oh God. But yeah, no, not really any of that at Frog, I'm pleased to say.
That is nice. Everyone's happy when they're having cake, so.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think there's definitely just like a good mood in general.
Nice. I think it sounds like you've been quite lucky with your hospitality experience.
Oh, 100. I mean, there are other ones that I'm glossing over that were much less like short-lived, and like it is, yeah, it's not for the faint-hearted, I have to say. And I've never really done like proper chefing. And like, honestly, like I just don't think I'm cut out for it. I think
No, I'm not either. I'm not interested at all.
It just, you know, just the dynamics in a kitchen more than anything. Like I remember Oliver, who's one of the co-founders of Frog, like I remember reading this interview he did where, so he was, I think he was like a graphic designer, and then he was like, I just really want to get into food. And so he got a job, he got a job trial at Hawksmoor, this steak restaurant, which I think is in Manchester now as well. And he was a pastry chef, so that's what he was trying to do. I think he'd done a bit of chefing already, but like not on that scale. And he basically just blagged the interview and was like, yeah, I can do all of this, which then led to him like in the toilets Googling how to make shortbread. Oh, and I was like, that is just genuinely my worst nightmare. Like, I just can't
blag that at all. I would just melt with anxiety, I think.
Can you imagine? And in that sort of like, I mean, I don't know what the kitchen at Hawksmoor is like, but it's a busy restaurant. Like, I imagine there's a lot going on.
Oh my gosh, no. That's like, yeah. I think I'd have a nightmare about that kind of thing.
I think I'd just like walk out. Yeah. Just be like, sorry, no, it's not for me.
Yeah. So what is your favourite thing to cook for people you love?
So I was thinking about this question, and I think the honest answer is, there's kind of two prongs to this answer. I have a thing that I often cook when I have like a lot of people over, which is the Nigella sweet potato macaroni and cheese, which I love. I've made it like, once I had to like buy, I had loads of people coming over for my birthday and I had to buy this like foil tray. I think I made enough for like 30 or 40 people.
Oh my gosh,
wow. And I had to like, it wouldn't even fit in my oven. I had to sort of like fold the corners in. But it works. Like, it's one of those recipes you can kind of like infinitely scale up or down.
Yeah.
It's great. It's just such a crowd pleaser. Like, it's this beautiful orange color from the sweet potatoes. It's like a really cheerful food, and I always love to make that. But I think also for the people that I truly love, they're probably the people I would make least effort for, which sounds bad, but like, I think the genuine like true friendship is like inviting someone over for like bottom of the fridge pasta or like a takeaway. You know, quite often, like if me and my friends are tired, then I'll be like, oh, do you want to hang out? You know, we'll get a takeaway in. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's nice. Like, I love to cook, but sometimes it's just more important to hang out with people.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think before you said that, I was actually going to say a lot of the people I've spoken to, almost the more into food you are, the more simple this dish is to like the answer to this question. And
totally,
I think it's like, also when you're with your friends, you want to be focusing on them and have
exactly
something dish, and you don't, if you made something complicated, you might actually not even be able to absorb what you've made in a way.
And yeah, 100%.
Actually, the whole point of this is just to have fun with you. I'm just gonna make something easy and comforting and delicious, and yeah, we can have
yeah one. Exactly. And I think, I mean, anyone who's listened to Lekha in the past couple of years will know that I'm obsessed with kitchens. Mm-hmm. And I think our kitchens are such a big part of that. Like, I have a kitchen that's very separate, and it is like, we've actually knocked a wall down in the flat, so it is a bit better. But before, it was like you had to like go around a corner to get into the living room, and it, like, you were completely, so if I had friends over and I decided to make something that was like quite elaborate or needed a lot of last minute cooking, I just wouldn't see them for like 2 hours. And that, you know, and I definitely did that a few times and then was just like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you learn your
they're not here for this.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, it's fine to enjoy doing those things. And I enjoy spending a long time in the kitchen. Like, I love, like, I haven't really done it since COVID, but for my birthday for a few years running, I just had like a load of people over to my house, and like, the day before, I just spend the whole day in the kitchen, like making the mac and cheese and like maybe doing some pulled pork and like loads of sides and like maybe some dips. And like, nothing gives me greater joy than that. But I want it all to be ready by the time they arrive.
Yeah.
I think that's the ideal situation.
Yeah. Oh, I love that answer. So kind of the opposite to that, you did your bonus series on Lekha, A Table for One.
Yeah.
Where you spoke to 4 people about eating alone. I really loved it because I think we obviously talk about food, as we were just saying, about bringing people together and the power of like enjoying a meal together, which I obviously think is really important, but there's still joy to be found for cooking for yourself.
Definitely.
Because cooking for yourself is still cooking for love, right?
Right, totally. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
What were some of your main takeaways from that series? Was there anything that like surprised you in particular? Or
that's a really good question. I think it was a project that I did for this audio festival in Ireland, and it was actually like, what was the fun thing about it? It was an installation at the festival, so people would come and they would sit at this table that was in like the main square of this Irish village. So in full view of kind of everyone passing, and they would listen to the pieces. Like, so you had kind of that experience that you can sometimes feel of like eating alone in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. which feels quite exposed and vulnerable. And I really liked the kind of parallel of that. But I interviewed quite a lot more people that I didn't end up including. Like, I just didn't have space to. And I think one of the things that surprised me was maybe like people's willingness to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people, it felt like a lot of people just had. And also, like, not just that, but people's very different interpretations of what it meant. Like, I sort of asked people quite a vague general question to begin, which was like, how do you feel about eating alone? And people kind of interpreted that in a lot of different ways. Like Jenny, the German woman that I interviewed that was in the series, she immediately talked about eating alone at home because she lived alone.
Right.
And then there was this real like throwaway comment where she was just like, I mean, obviously I have people over as well. But I was like, oh, that's so interesting that like that's your interpretation of like this. But then for other people, immediately they talked about like traveling for work and having to eat in restaurants on their own and like being uncomfortable about that. And that made me look at it differently, because I think when I'd started the series, I think when I had the idea to make it, I was like, I think maybe I do mean more like eating alone in the public eye. The thing that feels like. But then also, like, when I'm in the for some reason, if I'm like buying something in the supermarket and it's very obviously like something for one person, like I always remember like buying like a single fillet of salmon and a tiny like mini bottle of wine and being like, oh, cringe, like this is really. And I was like, why am I embarrassed about this? This is so weird, like no one cares. But there is definitely like a taboo about both things, because I think we're so like, as a society, we're so afraid of talking about loneliness and like so afraid of talking about, you know, what happens if people don't have support or family unit. But like, I think levels of loneliness and like being people being alone and living alone are like higher than ever before. So it's something that we should be talking about. But then I also don't think that eating alone means that you're lonely. Like, it's kind of this weird like conundrum of like tangled web of thoughts that I haven't fully worked out, which I think reflects my own like feelings about it. Like I love eating alone because I'm like, you know, I'm a classic only child. Like, I'm quite a stubborn and independent person. And sometimes I enjoy not having to like take other people's feelings or wants into consideration. So like, I can make whatever I want for dinner, or I can go out to a restaurant that I want to go to without negotiating and eat whatever I want. But the other side of that is that it can be quite uncomfortable to do it.
Especially at a restaurant.
Yeah. Actually, I read this interview with, I think it was with the chef Jeremy Lee, who has a restaurant called Quo Vadis. It was either him or Fergus Henderson from St John. I can't remember which one it was. It's probably quite bad of mixing them up, but never mind.
I don't think they're going to be listening.
No, I don't think. It's just other food people would judge me for not remembering. And they were basically like, we think the greatest compliment you can pay a restaurant is dining alone. And it really like reframes how I thought about eating alone. And I was like, oh, that's so nice, because I've always felt like a burden because I'm taking up a table that could be for... So I thought it was so refreshing to read that take on it. And it was a very like generous view of it from a restaurant person. It was really nice. I think maybe it was St John, actually. I think it possibly was.
It does sound like the type of thing he would say.
Yeah, and I think a lot of St John is quite a solo diner sort of place. I mean, so is Quo Vadis, I think. But like, I think people do go there to kind of like have the experience of eating there.
Oh, that's really interesting. So when you do cook for yourself, what's one of your favourite things to cook? Mine's fresh pasta.
Oh, I love that. Is cooking for love. Yeah. Wow, like from scratch.
If I've got time, yeah, I love to just sit and enjoy my bowl on my own.
Love that. That's a good question. I really love Korean food. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this always comes down to like, I think when you live with someone, this question always ends up being like, this is what my partner doesn't like. Yeah. And it always feels a bit shaming. But I really love, like, I don't cook loads of Korean food. I don't like, I'm by no means an expert on it. But I really love kimchi stew. And so quite often, like, if Rory's not going to be in, I will take, because he's just not mad about it. Like, he doesn't love it. So I love to make a kimchi stew. But I have to say, I mean, quite often, it ends up being, quite often it'll end up being like instant noodles with things on or things on toast. Like, I enjoy cooking for myself, but sometimes it's also a nice time to just not think too much about it.
Yeah.
I did make, this was actually the first night I was home after I'd been away and I didn't really have anything in. So I was like, okay, I just want to make something quickly. And I made, like, I had some like kind of yellow split peas that had been in a jar for like ages. I was like, oh, I'll just make something quick with those. And I made this really great dal with them. And I can't remember where I got the recipe for the tarka from, but it was just really delicious. And I think because I hadn't really eaten anything that I'd cooked myself for so long. And I had some just like some like chopped raw onion with lemon juice on the top, and I had it with rice, and it was just really good.
I love a tadka dal. Like,
it's just great.
Just so comforting. That was really like student meal for sure.
Oh, that's a good student. Yeah, I definitely wasn't that cooking food that was that interesting when I was a student. Yeah, a lot of bread pesto pasta. But
if I was fancy, I'd maybe put some spinach in there. That was like the got more money today phase.
But... Oh yeah, an actual bag of fresh spinach. Yeah, that is loan time.
But yeah, dal was a real staple. I love it.
Yeah, and there's something really satisfying about when you boil the lentils or the peas or whatever separately, mm-hmm. and then like add it in, and it the kind of the moment when it all comes together. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. It's definitely something I want to make again. I want to get more into cooking with pulses. Like I did a few months ago, I did an order from Hard Me Dogs, which is like they have like English grown pulses and beans. Such a great and like really interesting sort of things. Like one of the things I bought was, I think, the first ever commercial crop of lentils grown in the UK. Like,
oh,
this was
interesting.
Maybe not like the first kind of harvest from it, but like that was the first variety, because apparently they're very difficult to grow.
Okay.
Which is interesting considering like how much I would eat them without thinking about it. It's nice to sort of spend money with companies that are doing interesting things around kind of farming and like regenerative practices and stuff. So yeah, I want to, that's going to be like
quinoa as well.
Oh, cool. Okay. Oh, I'm definitely going to try that.
Yeah. And it's really nice as well. It's like a bit more like toasty.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Really good. I would recommend that.
Okay. I'm definitely going to get some of that. Yeah. And it's just, you know, there's such like a narrow variety of kind of, if you just go to like a regular supermarket, there's quite a narrow variety of beans and pulses, and there's so much more available. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to kind of see more of that, have access to it.
Yeah. Have you had bold beans?
Oh no, but I keep seeing they've got that really nice packaging, haven't they?
Yeah.
I want to try that because I absolutely love those like Spanish jarred beans that you can get, and I was like, I feel like this is going to be a good, not necessarily cheaper alternative, but they can't be much more expensive than those chickpeas.
Cheap, but they, like, if you're going to do a meal centered around chickpeas,
it makes sense.
It makes a big difference, and like,
yeah.
Like for a chickpea salad or something, I always go to them because, they're really delicious.
Okay, that's a great recommendation. Are there any varieties you'd recommend?
Their chickpeas are my favourite, I would say.
Great.
But still, and even like the juice that it comes in is delicious. Like if I'm making a salad, I'll save that.
Yeah.
And put it into a stock
I mean, I think it's like, I can't remember what the name of the brand is, but I get them through like Brindisa and other places that do and it comes in like this sort of gel. I feel like it begins with a J, maybe, the brand, I can't remember. But the chickpeas are almost in like this sort of gel, like jelly,
like nice and salty, and
oh my god, yeah, they're so good. And I keep meaning to make hummus with them, but they're just so good I end up just eating them on their own.
For sure.
It'd be the most expensive hummus ever, but worth it.
I feel like I could literally chat to you forever.
Same. This is so nice.
But always ask to end with, what does cooking for love mean to you?
Ooh. I feel like I half answered this with my like cooking for love is not making as much effort.
Yeah.
I think it just means it's not about what you cook, it's about how you cook it. Like I think, but also like I think anything, so someone making anything for me homemade is like such a treat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'd, you know, that could be like literally somebody like making me a sandwich, or like I think that is such an act of love for me. Like any sort of, you know, going around someone's house and then feeding you, that is such an act of love, like such an act of affection. That like I'm quite easily pleased, to be honest. Like the bar is low, like when it comes to cooking for love. Like I just think it's, you know, such a nice thing to do. Like I love cooking for people, and having it returned, I think, is just like very rewarding.
Yeah, it's such a nice feeling.
Yeah.
And
And I feel
it's
like I've got out the habit of it a little bit. Like I think since the pandemic, like it's, and I've talked to a few people about this, I found it hard to get back to my like previous social habits and like a sort of remembering what I did before. And I definitely don't have people over as much as I used to. And like I really want to get back to it because
Yeah.
yeah, it's just there's nothing nicer. Like I always love going around someone's house and just like eating whatever. It's great.
Yeah, me too. And it's such a nice feeling to cook for someone, no matter what it is, and
Yeah.
like just kind of feeding someone is kind of no matter, like you say, no matter what it is an act of love in a way. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I'd probably say the greatest act of love is when someone cooks something that they don't like, but they know you do.
Yeah. That's so true.
Fortunately, I like everything, so
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not so much of a problem for me, but
I'm just trying to think if I've ever done
yeah, I didn't, yeah, that just kind of
that.
popped into my head, but
I don't think
I guess like, you know, I don't know,
Mums
like,
probably do that, yeah.
oh my God, yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I can't think of an example, but
I love how I'm still thinking about your mum chopping the onions big, because that's really.
it's
It's
so sweet,
also
isn't
like how she
it?
was like, well, I'm not going to not include them,
Yeah, because I
but this
want
is
the
how I'm
onion
going to
flavor
adapt for
in.
you, yeah.
It's also just like a really smart way because you do get the flavor, and she was like, but you, it's not the flavor that you don't like, it's the texture. And I was like,
Yeah.
yeah, that's right.
How do you know my brain?
I know, honestly. I mean, that
Yeah.
is, I think that's a real act of love as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Although she got to eat all the onion, which I think she was quite happy about, so.
That's funny. Oh, thank you so much. This has
No, thank you
been
so much, Kate. This has been
really
really
great.
fun.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you all for listening to Cooking for Love, and a huge thank you to Lucy for being my guest this week. It was such a joy to chat to her. Make sure to listen to Lekka wherever you're listening to this podcast. Cooking for Love will be changing to a monthly release, so look out each month for the new episode. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others to find the podcast. See you next month.